Government Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBS Radio on this April the 17th on the West Coast, or if you are listening on the Eastern or in Central Time Zones, then you know that it is now the morning of April the 18th, 2009. Welcome to the show. We have a few things that we're going to discuss with tonight's guests, so I'm not really going to go into a long introduction here. There are several news items that may be worth mentioning. Our usurper president is now entertaining a dialogue with communist Cuba, and it should be of no surprise because we have a communist Washington, D.C. right now, so maybe they're looking at gambling and prostitution and drugs and maybe a little extra coffee. Who knows? The president, as he is called by the media, was in Trinidad today. What he was doing there, I don't know. Maybe he was inspecting the Olympic team. The sprinters are quite good from Trinidad. And they also have some pretty good soccer players, football as it's called in other countries. Mexico, according to what's been out in the media, in the alternative media, Obama is working with the Mexican president to curb the immigration problem. Now, it seems that we have the immigration problem here. And they can't control the drugs. How are they going to control the people who are bringing the drugs over here? I mean, it's ridiculous what's going on. People are waking up. We've had our tea parties around the country on the 15th. And by and large, it was a moot event in terms of the mainstream media. They did report on it a little bit, but as usual, there's a slant to it, and they don't really tell anyone why people are protesting. They mention high taxes or the loss of jobs and a few things like that. But no one brings up the corruption that is occurring. And it's been reported on this show for over 2 years and on other shows for about 3 years. Finally, the word trillion now is being used on a regular basis. It's just thrown out there flippantly as if it always existed. Somehow we leapfrogged from millions to trillions, and we forgot about the billions in the middle. There have been numerous reports that Barack Obama has attempted. And there's some interesting stories in regard to this. He's attempted using one of Bill Gates' top experts to crack the codes of the banking accounts that lead one to steal money from anywhere and everywhere. And there were attempts to do this in front of foreign dignitaries that have come to the United States specifically to get monies that have been stolen or withheld from their governments. And they couldn't crack the codes, which was quite interesting and an embarrassment to Obama, and possibly something that's pushing us a bit closer to the brink of World War III in the process. So, folks, you asked for a change. If anything, I suggest you change your underwear. That's about all the change you're going to get these days. That said, I would like to, and this is not necessarily the opportune moment to segue to our guest, but I have to bring him on sooner or later. So that said, I will once again invite back to Evident Footprints our good friend who is a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, and my good friend, and co-host on Friday nights on Evident Footprints, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome again to the show.
Well, thank you, Don, and thank you for that long intro. It gave me a chance to change my underwear.
Okay. All right, you had a pair just right there next to your phone, did you?
Well, they were in the bedroom, but I had enough time to make the swap.
Okay. All right. Well, we don't have to go into all of that stuff, but it's more of the same, isn't it? It doesn't end.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I was at the rally here in Oklahoma City on the 15th, and it was very interesting to see the number of people that turned out. A lot of the signs and slogans that they were displaying were very witty, and some did come right to the point. The speakers were interesting, and even a couple of them were eloquent. But I was disappointed in the fact that nobody really got to the issues, in my opinion. I mean, they talk about the things that they're allowed to know about through the media, but nobody that did any public speaking addressed the crucial issues. So I guess it's the first step. I shouldn't say anything negative. But the thing that was impressive, though, was altogether, there were several million people across the country doing this, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some people are awake, and you could probably surmise that the majority of those people that were at these tea parties were probably former Ron Paul supporters. Would you say that, or was there a cross-section of...
I really think there was a cross-section there. Of course, I didn't interview anybody, so I really have no way of making an intelligent opinion about that, but just from things I picked up after the presentation was over and people were walking away, it sounded from all the conversations that I overheard that it was probably a very mixed bag.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was just Ron Paul supporters.
Okay, well, that's a positive note. Anyway, last night, if I can mention this to you, Jim, because I don't know if you got to hear the show, I had Dr. Christopher Holmes on, and he's up in Canada. He is a clinical psychologist, or let's say maybe a psychiatrist as well. He has treated people in the prison system for a number of years. He's been in that profession for about 30 years. And he is a pretty regular listener to Evident Footprints. And he has a show also on BBS Radio called Zero Point. And he says he's awakened about 2.5 years ago to what's really going on here. Here's a gentleman who's been in mainstream science in terms of the medical community, and he's got a very similar outlook on things to my own, I have to say. In fact, I kind of quip with him when we speak together that he sounds like he listens to Evident Footprints, and he says that he does. And I got some feedback from the listeners in regard to his take on what's going on, and he gets pretty upset like you and I do. He gets into the heart of the matter, and he's one that discerns from the heart at the same time. Quite knowledgeable about metaphysics, like you. He studied the Vedic sciences, and he's studied mysticism, and the different ideologies that are the underlying features of social constructs, if you want to use that term, and he knows a lot about science. You can tell when you hear him speak. He speaks with an authority in a very simple, easy to understand fashion, much like you do. And he basically describes the world and its governments as a collection of psychopaths. And I've used that term for the past couple of years, and it was kind of interesting to hear someone from his profession, someone who deals with those issues day in and day out, recognize that in everything. And he went down a laundry list of stuff, and I know he wasn't reading this. It just came off the top of his head. He went into the chemtrails and water and the pollution and mind control and microwaves, and he just went through every single thing and even talked a lot about the corruption. And I know he has a lot of esteem for your contribution to this show as well. He does listen on Friday nights, too. So he may be listening tonight, but I thought I would mention the fact that he was on the show for the first time last night, and it was very well received. So we want to uphold that standard tonight, which you always do. Anyway, comments?
Well, that sounds to me like he covered a wide spectrum of interest, and obviously he's a very knowledgeable guy. Isn't he the one who called in on our show a couple of times?
That's correct, yes. He's calling in, and you've actually met him during the show.
I was very impressed with him then also. As a matter of fact, the knowledge of psychology that I have is gained mostly from the school of hard knocks and from thinking about my own problems and other people's problems. But it would be great at some point to actually interface with someone whose professional discipline was gained, by study. And that's a rare thing to find a man who's really good in that field nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can tell that he's genuinely driven by the nature of his work. I don't have to say that he's following his Hippocratic oath. That becomes quite obvious as soon as he begins speaking, that he really cares about what he's doing. And he is definitely upset with what's occurring right now on the planet. And he's taking steps to change it. And he's encouraged us to continue to be outspoken, like we are. It's good to know that there's someone else there that feels the same way. What I'm saying, so
absolutely.
Now,
more than merrier.
Yes, absolutely. That's correct. You and I didn't really plan a show for tonight, but I came across a piece via Ken Adachi, who was also on the show this week. And in fact, Ken was on this past Wednesday, and we've talked about many of the same topics. We've been zeroing in on some of the metaphysical phenomena that appear to be coinciding with many of the false flag events and coinciding with certain technologies that are being used, and whether it's chemtrails being sprayed or some of the antimatter systems that are flying craft around the planet. And Ken has been in touch with a man by the name of David Brandt, who has been writing a few pieces, and Ken was pretty impressed with what he had written, and he just posted a communication from David Brandt called Suppressed Pioneers of New Knowledge, and I thought I would read this to sort of spawn a discussion, which is in line with what you and I have been talking about over the past few weeks. I know we've been attempting to stay focused on technology, but we've talked about this insatiable quest or thirst for power that the so-called elite have. And this touches home with two of the individuals that you and I have been talking about. So if I can read this quickly, it's not too long of a piece. I'd be interested in your perceptions of what this man has to say. This is
go ahead.
This is from Ken Adachi's website, educate-yourself.org, and it's at the top of his current news item, actually latest articles. Suppressed Pioneers of New Knowledge is the title. There are people whose brilliance was harvested while their values were discarded and ridiculed. Nikola Tesla is one whose name and ideals are just beginning to be known. What about Austrian Victor Schauberger, whose inventions worked with natural law? He could have provided all the free energy that anyone could ever want, and his inventions had the potential to restore the earth that he loved so much. Since running water is toxic to the entities which seem to infect consciousness by design, perhaps Schauberger's inventions and ideas have more far-reaching applications than even he had imagined. Sometimes justice is found in such ironies. Schauberger's name is rarely heard. His research was stolen from him, first in part by Hitler, and then by the big oil boys of Texas and the United States government. These brave souls lived with honor. Their gifts were not for just humanity, but for the entire planet. The dark agenda is not about physical death that is trivial to them. It is about preventing the advancement of spirituality. I wonder if a single altruistic action, supplying many people with the ability to power their homes, for example, and acting without concern of material gain from this, but only to finally put a stop to this insanity, would have an effect. They can target one or a group of people, but once the cat is out of the bag on a large scale, it will not go back in. The plan has been articulated by Henry Kissinger quite well. It's all about controlling energy, food, and water. My basic premise has been that those who seek to control others have not even come close to the true challenge, which is in controlling themselves. And I write this with a bit of humor simply because the solution to their problem is so close that they must intentionally ignore it. The entire scarcity-based mindset is at the root of these problems. There is no such thing as scarcity. There is abundance. And this has been proven time and again. I recall an email exchange with a man by the name of Wade Frazier back in 2003 or 2004. He has a website now detailing his journey and his ideas. It is at www.ahealedplanet.net, home.htm. Wade states that what is most scarce from his observation is integrity. From my observation, he is correct. It is in short supply, however. I have been fortunate in my life to know others who possess it, who would walk away from $1 trillion if they couldn't look at themselves in the mirror if the terms for taking it went against their integrity. Scarcity is a created paradigm to justify atrocities for many years. This paradigm must be broken by critical mass. Just as a thought, if either or both Tesla's and Schauberger's concepts, which they both proved beyond a doubt were not only workable but by far the best solutions, had been implemented, I know the energy cartel would not exist, and I strongly believe that neither would the pharmaceutical industry. I know that I'm not writing anything that you don't already know about. It shouldn't surprise me to find information elsewhere, only to see that you've had the information covered for some time. He's referring to Ken Adachi, of course. I have a strong desire to see this stranglehold broken, for others to learn the truth, and I do see this occurring, and for that critical mass to be reached to effect a change. What kind of world would we be looking at if these proven concepts and designs had been put into immediate positive use? As much as I hate to admit it, the fight to raise consciousness and assist others to break out of old paradigms may just be by design. When I was very closed-minded and a skeptic, I had the false belief that events were accidental, of random chance. If I have learned anything, it's that nothing happens by accident, and there is no such thing as coincidence. David Brandt. Your thoughts on that, Jim?
Well, gee, I mean, that's a lot of territory. Well, the closing remarks might as well be explored first. First of all, I agree full-heartedly, you know, with that. And the whole idea of, again, we're talking about the expansion of consciousness. It seems like we can never get away from that. It is, of course, the true purpose of our presence on the planet. And if these other elite who are trying to subjugate everybody are ever to succeed, then naturally they have to keep that down. Now, when higher consciousness is brought into play, depending on the individuals involved, you know, all manner of inspirations are brought forth. A person like yourself is probably inspired musically. You know, people like Michelangelo are probably inspired artistically. People like Schoberger and Tesler were inspired technologically. And these inspirations are very interesting because I've had several of my own, as you know, and what's interesting about them is they are coming from a source on a continual basis, all on their own. I'm sure of this.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is if a person has a particular mindset and the right amount of training in a certain direction, there's a resonance of some sort that's produced, and these concepts or these ideas which are being transmitted suddenly strike a chord in your mind, and you get an inspiration. The thing that's really exciting about it, though, once you understand the nature of these inspirations, every single one of them is traceable back to something that already exists in nature. As a matter of fact, it probably has been right in front of people for eons, but it just takes somebody to look at it in the right way to bring forth information which appears to be new. I mean, look at the Wright brothers just as an example. Okay, they produced a flying machine, but the principles of lift and drag and all of the other aspects associated with aerodynamics have been embodied in birds and squirrels and flying reptiles for millions of years. And I think that's really the way it goes with everything, if you really start to get into it, you'll find out that it's all here already. And the only thing that makes the difference is consciousness. You know, how many round stones do you suppose cavemen looked at before somebody got the bright idea of poking a hole in the middle and using it for a wheel? I bet you they walked over millions of them. You know, it's always that way. The truth is not hidden. It's out there, but you have to be aware of it to do something with it. And interestingly enough, that also has parallels which penetrate into the current political problem.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I may say so, and I'm agreeing with everything you're saying, you know, he early in this piece, David Brandt mentions the concept of what we are going through here is it can be explained as the prevention of the advancement of spirituality. Now, this week, just as an example, and I could go through last week as well and touch upon the same things, and the week before that, I've had some repeat guests on the show, but regardless of the topic that we've discussed, I had Greg Pappas on Monday, and we discussed the issue of the administrative law that we have here in the United States, and we got into some very etheric concepts about how the contracts we are and the debts which are assigned to us through the covert contracts, like social security numbers and those types of things, licenses and all of that. The ultimate reality is that we're in a spiritual battle with forces of evil that would do this to us. These can't be benevolent beings doing this to us. Michael Anthony was on Tuesday, and we talked about health and the immune system and all the different viruses and bacteria and the things that they're doing to cause people to get sick and die, or to at least increase the size of the coffers of the pharmaceutical companies and the medical community at large. And we came to the conclusion that this was a spiritual issue. This was spiritual warfare. Ken Adachi was on Wednesday, and we talked about a variety of things. We did talk about chemtrails and sylphs, and we talked about the propagandized media and the mind control. And we came to the same conclusion. It's spiritual warfare. With Dr. Christopher Holmes last night, again, spiritual warfare. We're dealing with psychopaths here. We're dealing with Satan worshipers. We're dealing with alien beings that are pulling their strings. Spiritual warfare. There's no doubt about this. And the truth in what you just described as far as inspiration and the motivations and the insight that one gets through the heart, again, is a spiritual matter. It transcends science. Even though you're a scientist, I'm sure you would agree that these things cannot be explained by science, mainstream science. In fact, they deny these things, do they not?
Oh, absolutely. And as far as the spirituality of the whole issue goes, I certainly have no problem with that. I mean, what is consciousness and the expansion of consciousness but an effort to broaden the effects of spirit? I mean, your spirit itself is a thing which is capable of growth. And that growth has to be related to consciousness. As a matter of fact, I had dinner with Randy the other day, and that's exactly what we were talking about. We were talking about the fact that this whole concept of assuming a material existence, a spiritual being assuming a material existence for the sake of having feedback, because without the feedback, the spiritual part of him cannot grow.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's very similar to, I believe we talked about this once before, it's very similar to saying being dead or being an incarnate being is like if you could turn off your hearing and close your eyes and just disconnect completely from your body and then think about doing something. Okay, let's say it's ping pong. Let's say it's basketball. Let's say it's carving a statue. You know, whatever it is. You might be able to visualize that in every imaginable detail, but until you can put yourself in a situation where you can literally manifest those behaviors in a real sense, there's no way that you can find the gratification that you have after some task is completed.
Yeah, there are different levels.
As long as it stays in the spiritual and mental realm, there's no satisfaction. And without satisfaction, there can't be growth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a question of manifesting it in a material or physical environment, which gives one the opportunity to act out those choices rather than
just contemplate
them or attune into what the vibration is. It's because there's much to be learned and much to be experienced through the doing of it in that realm, which is why we will move towards some physical reality after death. It will change. I mean, we'll see ourselves with a new body, and likely it's a light body that like we have now. we do have a light body, but they've been able to dim the light from outside.
And, well, that's the whole point. If they fix things in such a way that your concentration is directed only towards the material, you dim your own light source because you start to believe that this is the real world. And you forget about the fact that you're here to learn.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a classroom. In the meantime, these people that are doing this, they already know all this. But they choose to disconnect from the higher source. That's their motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, in doing that, then they turn around and utilize the lesser spiritually evolved for their own purposes.
Well, yeah.
And by the way, you know, you brought up an interesting point earlier when you were talking about Obama and the computer situation where he was trying to get one of Bill Gates' gurus to,
mm-hmm.
to crack into the
codes, the banking codes.
The banking codes for the monies that are all, you know, stowed for other purposes. But anyway, the interesting thing is that even though he didn't succeed, the comments that he actually made got out by virtue of the delegates that were present.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, he referred to people like you and me and Joe the plumber down the block as worthless scum that has no reason to ever expect to see any of this money.
Yes. Yeah, this is the guy that can't prove where he's from, okay? Boy, I'll tell you, too, I've got some startling discoveries to share with my readers and my listeners in the upcoming weeks. I'll put that out there. And
The only reason I broke off to mention that is because, you know, a person that was spiritually motivated would certainly be spending his time doing other things, and he wouldn't have that type of an evaluation of his fellow man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these people that consider themselves elite, in my opinion, the only thing that's big about them is their ego.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's
you know, Jim, isn't that hate speech? You know? I mean, that is the grandest form of hate speech, if I've ever heard it. Not what you said, what he said, calling us scum. I did read that, too.
Yeah, I read the same thing.
Yeah, this information is coming from a variety of sources, and what's interesting now, based on what I know personally and what I have found through my research, which is not the same thing, and from reading the materials that others are getting through Intel and their own work, Christopher Story being one, these stories are cross-referencing and they're synchronizing. Okay? So they can be, I think the consciousness, the grasp that those that are watching this and investigating this have on the subject is beginning to meld together into a unity. There is a unified purpose behind us exposing this and finding it, and we are consistently finding it. And these, to the detriment of the rest of the world, all those who were asleep at the wheel and have no idea what is going on, they're going to find out that we were right all along. Eventually, it's going to come out. And it's not going to come out the way they're hoping and the way they've been promised. Like I said at the top of the show, the change you can expect is your underwear. And if you want to see change, go get a pair and change it. You know, it's really all the value you can give to that campaign slogan that he had. Change you can believe in. Well, you know, the definition of that word belief is an assumption, right? So you can assume. Change you can assume. But, you know, they say when you assume, you make an ass out of you and me. So there are different ways of looking at the words and different ways of interpreting these campaign promises and these public speeches. I mean, you're watching someone. It's like watching Napoleon try to be Hitler. And he's coming out as a cross between Gomer Pyle and Hugo Chavez of Venezuela. None of it's making any sense. None of it, other than it's just a continuation of corruption. So this is a spiritual issue. People have to ask themselves, and this is the last statement I want to make about this and give you a chance to speak on this. If you contemplate for a moment that we are going through this, that this is possible and that we are actually experiencing this, and this is just an illusion, then what are we really missing? What substance, what aspect of spirituality we're shooting ourselves in the feet over this, definitely, and probably in the head at the same time, allowing this charade to go on like this. You just have to put up with this because this is politics. This is not even politics. This is corruption at the lowest level and the grandest scale at the same time, the lowest vibration, masquerading as leaders, as leadership, as something to be admired, something to be worshipped. And there's no aspect of it that even comes close to that. I can worship the garbage man that picks up my garbage once a week more than I can these people who are in power. Because the garbage man has my permission to pick up what I dispose, what I discard. And he has the common sense to leave it alone, to assume that because I'm letting it go, it has no value. Now, that's exactly the opposite character that you have running this country right now, that's trying to steal everything in sight and everything that's hidden as if it somehow is owed to him. And I can tell you that these words are going to be supported by some mind-blowing information that's going to come out about Barack Obama and Michelle Obama and some other people who are all involved in these charades. Mind-blowing, yet it's going to be understood as true. It's going to be accepted as a truth. So, your turn.
Well, you brought up a good point, and I've been waiting to comment on it. It was back when you were starting your little soliloquy there. You said, what seems to be missing that allows us or prevents us from doing something about, what's occurring here? Well, these people have molded the majority of society to be non-responsive in terms of anything that you would normally feel you should do. And this starts in the school systems. It starts with police officers. It starts with any authority figure. So by the time, if you fall into this state of conditioning, by the time you're an adult, you may realize that you're completely irritated about something. But you've already been conditioned, that you're not supposed to react in an overt way. And so basically, there's that same problem we talked about on so many shows, where you have two opposing forces appearing inside of an individual. And it just leads to a state of neurotic behavior. If a person wasn't preconditioned in that way, you would simply pick up a club and beat the daylights out of the person that was irritating him. Now, you're conditioned that that's wrong. But the irony of it is, when is it right?
Yeah. Well,
normally people don't behave that way, okay? But if you if you keep encroaching on the person's personal space, sooner or later, you'll get to a point where you're going to get a violent reaction. Now, what these creeps do is, over the centuries, and it's actually been centuries, that they've experimented with this stuff, what they'll do is they'll keep encroaching on your personal space, your personal liberties, your personal possessions, every aspect of your existence, and they'll go just far enough so that they don't create the overbearing irritation that will cause an asymmetry in those two opposing forces to the point where you will burst out and have a reaction. And so everybody is just basically sitting around in an irritated state of neurosis, and they're looking for or hoping for something that will allow them to rupture out of that. Now, interestingly enough, in playing this game, they may not realize it, but they are slowly edging to the point where there is going to be an explosion of awareness, and there is going to be the very reaction that they don't want.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anybody can test this theory. It's very, very simple to do. I've actually done it many times just to make a point, but it takes a little bit of gumption, and it's a great way to introduce this to another individual. If you're sitting in a diner or a restaurant, for instance, and you're up at the counter, you have a certain natural line of demarcation between the stool you're sitting on and the one that your neighbor is sitting on. And even though nobody talks about it or there's nothing overtly delineated, everybody knows that there's an invisible area around you and around your neighbor that represents your personal space under those conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And if you deliberately start to encroach upon the person next to you, depending on his personality, depending on how angry he is internally, and depending on a lot of other things, sooner or later, he's going to have something to say to you. And I've actually started doing this, you know, to the point where first you move a salt shaker over into another person's area, then maybe you'll actually take his napkin. You know, you just do things of that sort. Well, sooner or later, that person explodes. And, of course, if he doesn't hit you, that's a very good time to say, listen, I know what I was doing, but I was actually, it's actually an experiment. And then you go into an explanation of it. But that's exactly what these people do to us. And that's an indication that not only are they making use of psychological knowledge, but they're also fully aware of the fact that we have these force fields around us, these astral bodies, or whatever you want to call it, and they can only be encroached upon so far. Now, the experiment I just described, of course, is a physical one, where the encroachment is literally an invasion of your personal space. But that's also the one that we're most attuned to, and the one that you're most likely to rebel against. They've taken it a step further by actually doing this on a mental plane, because you can't see anybody invading your personal space. There's nobody around you poking at you or trying to steal your wallet or your handkerchief or messing with your personal belongings. This is being done to you by means of laws and attitudes and all of the other things that we are surrounded by in this modern dictatorial world. So we have a little bit higher tolerance to the mental intrusion than we do to the physical. But the reaction is eventually going to be the same. And the only thing that has prevented it from happening so far is the fact that the enemy, and I say that quote-unquote enemy, because for lack of a better term, has never been identified. And that's a real problem. You know, an animal needs to know who its tormentor is before he can attack. And these people have been very crafty about that because there's no specific enemy. But nowadays, the enemy is becoming well known.
Yes, that's true. And these, what you're describing to me, I think could be summed up in our apathy, which you referred to, about what's happening and our general disinterest. That's been programmed into us. And it's really the aspect, you know, if you become apathetic to your surroundings and the events that are playing out in front of you and have an impact on what you intend to do, if you have any intention at all at work or in force, it's causing us to shirk our responsibility, because acceptance of responsibility, which is inbred, it's there. We came here with an intention, with the intention of accomplishing something. Each one of us, whether we're aware of it or not, we came here for a specific purpose. Some people are artists. Some people are bankers. Some people drive trains. Some people drive buses. Others drive taxis. Some people fly airplanes. Some people are professional athletes. Some are actors and actresses, comedians. Some people work for the power company. Some people hook up telephone lines. Some people work in libraries. Some people work in stores. Some people sweep the streets. Some people spend their time dirtying them. And it's all a question of them on some level having made the decision that that's what they were going to do to give them a certain set of experiences. Speaking of which, we have a caller, Jim, if you would like to take a call. We have Sheldon from, I believe it's Tucson. Seth, is that correct?
Hi, Don. First time caller. I really like what I hear you say, especially on when I hear you on Greg Evenson's show. I'm going to try to start tuning into you more often. You seem to be one of the very few people out there that are catching on to what the research that Dr. Judy Wood has done into 9/11, and I really wanted to thank you that you're one of the very few people that are catching on to this.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Sheldon. I tried to have Dr. Wood on the show, and she was booked for two nights a couple of months ago, but something came up, and she was unable to make it. But I wanted to go into her research pertaining to the Hutchison effect, and I had brought up the issue of antimatter weapons, which seem to be, you know, we have metaphysical manifestations that are appearing every time we see antimatter at
use. You know, it's something to bring that up, because I was just talking to a lady researcher friend up in Wisconsin before I called you, and that's what she is phrasing this weapon as, is an antimatter weapon, and now all of a sudden they got this new report out. It's going to take 30 more years to rebuild the World Trade Center complex.
Well, I'm sure when they're done stealing all the money, they're going to have to figure a new way to get the money to do it. So it's probably closer related to than anything else, unless you're talking about maybe residual energy or radiation or something like that.
Well, John Lear explained it quite well on a radio show here last Saturday on Bill Alex's show, and Dr. Wood has explained this to me, too. It's called... the effects of the weapon that they use has non-self-quenching effects. In other words, the effects just keep going on and on and on, like a nuclear reaction breaking down. So they can't rebuild there because the site is infected. And if you think about it, it makes sense.
Yeah. I know maybe Jim Murray would like to comment on that, too. Jim being, you know, quite knowledgeable about physics. We've talked about this a lot on this show, too. Jim, do you want to comment?
Well, it's been a long time since I've studied antimatter, but basically what happens, of course, is that a positive particle and a negative particle that appropriate reverse spins come together, and they annihilate one another, and they release energy, mostly in the form of some type of photon, which, of course, can be in any number of frequency ranges. Now, normally, you would expect that energy to leave the area, and probably most of it does. But it's interesting that you bring up the concept of an infection, some kind of lingering situation that remains behind. Now, the first thing that comes to my mind is the work of Wilhelm Reich, because Reich did experiments with radium and orgone energy and found out that there was a residual, and that that residual affected biosystems very profoundly, and that it lingered for a very long time.
Well, that's why Dr. Wood has described this as a demonstration of free energy technology, because free energy, it keeps, you know, perpetually going on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jim, would you describe an antimatter weapon as under the classification of a directed energy weapon?
Well, I mean, that's anybody's guess at this point. Don't forget, they've got research going on that you and I will never be privileged to. If that was the case, they would have to have a way of directing it into a beam or a channel of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Because normally it tends to disperse in all directions.
Yeah. If I can comment on this for a moment, there was
sure.
a phenomenon that occurred as the towers came down. And there, you have to imagine that there was a lot of glass. There were a lot of small objects. And there was the potential for a lot of high frequency sound to make noise. But it was a low frequency rumbling that brought those buildings down. The overall sound itself from the inception of each of the towers and Building 7 falling was a low frequency sound. Now, that means there's a lot of standing waves occurring, and standing waves travel long distances. So despite what antimatter might do, there was certainly a lot of acoustical phenomenon going on that would cause or assist the antimatter to move in similar patterns. In other words, standing waves don't necessarily follow a particular route. They meet an obstacle, and if that obstacle doesn't absorb them, they're reflected, and they take on a course pertaining or, you know, symmetrical to the angle at which the first wave moved. That's a specific problem that occurs in the recording industry, specifically in mixing and mastering and recording, where you have sound waves that are reverberating in the room, and you want to cancel those out. You want to minimize them, so you just get the sound of the instrument and not the sound of the room and all of this extraneous phenomenon that goes on. Now, Judy Wood did a great study of the damage to the vehicles. There would be two or three cars or trucks or vans parked on the street that were burnt to a crisp like a piece of bacon. And in front or in between those vehicles or behind was another car totally untouched. And that was a repeated pattern, which shows that those waves, those energy waves, moved in certain directions and took out the things that were in their path. And other vehicles that were in very near proximity were not struck by the same energy waves or the same forces. So I merely point that out to show that there was sort of a random pattern as to how these cars, which were parked blocks away from that site. It wasn't like they were parked right in front of the buildings. In fact, no one parked in front of those buildings until the fire trucks and the emergency vehicles started coming in.
There were cars up to three quarters of a mile away that had this instant rustification on them.
Yes.
And Dr. Wood, she describes how the weaponry is sort of selective, like it had its own mind, these random patterns you're talking about. And I heard Bill mention how the energy would have to be channeled. Well, you got this big 24-foot diameter hole on the top of Building 6, or like a cookie cutter-shaped cutout, and here you got some holes on Liberty Street. It's like, you know, sometimes it was focused, sometimes it wasn't.
Yes. Well, there are some other phenomenon there, too, that were residual phenomenon. After the buildings had fallen, there were entities, and this is difficult for some people, but we can talk about this on this show, because we have photographic evidence of this. There were entities photographed in the smoke and the dust clouds and in the flames. Now, that can be merely an alchemic ritual that was performed, and I sincerely trust that my discernment tells me that this was planned out and that they summoned certain entities into the event. However, whether or not these entities played a role other than watching and manifesting themselves, there was a picture of skull and bones that appeared on one of the buildings at the feet of those who were hanging out the windows waiting to be rescued, before the buildings collapsed, in other words. And there were images of recognizable people in history in some of these clouds. And I've got the pictures, and I'm actually putting a DVD presentation together now of this. Now, in addition to that, Ken Adachi and I have a series of photographs of chemtrail manifestations. We have a series of photographs of flying saucers and light inversions that we did on the photos to reveal what is in the night sky. And the same types of entities that appear at the World Trade Center and at the Pentagon are in these photographs in the vicinity of antimatter-powered flying saucers. Okay? We have the photographs. These photographs were sent to Ken from England, and when he sent it to me, and Jim, you've seen these photos. It's been a couple of months since you and I did a show on this, but you know which ones I'm talking about, where you can see the antimatter interior of the craft when we inverted these photos. And you can see millions, if not billions, of entities around those crafts.
I remember the pictures.
So there, when we have antimatter, the point I'm making, Sheldon and Jim, is that when antimatter energy of any type is present, these entities show up. So when we see the entities, we can assume that likely there's antimatter. You get my drift.
It's interesting. I haven't heard that yet.
Now, that's thinking outside the box, but you see, this is not about belief. This is about merely making an objective analysis of the information that's there and considering what it might be. My experience in metaphysics and my sensitivities allow me to see those things. There's sometimes I see them with the naked eye or with the third eye. But in this case, these things were captured in photographs and on video. And you can study these, you can enlarge them, you can zoom in on them, and you can alter the light a little bit to bring out certain aspects that the naked eye wouldn't see. But that the camera is capturing these phenomena speaks volumes that these things exist and that they take on human-like faces or animal-like faces or creatures that look like crosses between humans and animals. Some would be called sylphs or elementals. And some are very demonic in appearance. So there's a lot. I mean, you don't kill people because you love God. You know, you don't mass murder thousands of people because you want to impress the Creator. This is anti-God. This is anti-universe, anti-matter. And so you're getting the manifestations of that. There's no doubt about that in my mind. Any comment from either one of you guys?
Well, I was just wondering, is Jim your co-host?
Well, of sorts, yeah. He's my regular guest on Friday, but when the intelligence agencies start attacking our servers, and I might drop off the call, Jim does an admirable job hosting the show. So
I'll be tuning into you, Mark. I always forget to tune you in at night, but I'm going to try to start listening to you more. What are your thoughts about this Hurricane Erin that was parked outside New York City on the morning of 9/11? Because that's one of the biggest secrets that most talk show hosts aren't touching on.
I presume I didn't hear him.
Did you?
Yes, he asked what we thought about Hurricane Erin, which was parked outside off the coast on 9/11. And I think that may have been there just to create, a radar disturbance or something like that. Maybe they used that as a means to hide some of what was about to come on the scene.
Well, Dr. Wood explains that the field effects from the hurricane were somehow coupled with these other energy sources to make the towers disappear. That's not word for word, but that's what I'm getting out of her research.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they did this from space, it likely could be, or from a very high altitude,
Don, you do have these upside down cars. Well, tornadoes typically do things like that. And Dr. Wood says tornadoes, when you place a tornado side by side with a hurricane, it looks like a supersized Tesla coil. So that does make sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, there could have been some Vortexian energy at play there, you know, and using, although a hurricane really doesn't appear, you know, in the physical sense to look like a tornado or a vortex. In a sense, it's got certain aspects of the vortex. The question is, what is it in a hurricane that we're not seeing that might be there? You know what I mean? It might just be a gigantic vortex that makes itself visible, within a certain range.
Maybe it's the scalar waves we're not seeing. I don't know.
Yeah. Jim, any comment on that?
Well, you know, that the there was a guy by the name of Trevor Constable that was doing weather research 20 or 25 years ago. And he was making use of Wilhelm Reich's Cloudbusters in the process of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And his conclusions were that with the proper type of cloudbuster, you can produce these vortexian flows of the orgone energy. Now, that, of course, doesn't necessarily mean that a tornado is a huge, or a hurricane, is a huge manifestation of the same thing. But I tend to believe that there's some kind of relationship, only because Reich himself was intrigued between the similarity of his own research and the natural weather systems responding to movements of orgone energy. Now, that brings us to another interesting possibility. Reich was also convinced that these UFOs were essentially powered or made use of the natural orgone envelope to travel through. And who's to say that it also can't be manipulated into a weapon? I mean, everything that mankind has ever put his hands on has been converted into a weapon in one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
So, the problem is, there's an awful lot we don't know. And these people have been making use of untold trillions of dollars, especially since World War II, to put themselves in a superior technological position. And regardless of how interested you might be in pursuing the sciences, if you don't have access to the equipment and to the knowledge that they have managed to perfect over the years, then you're stuck. You're stuck in the area of guessing, basically.
Yeah, well, the intrinsic nature of all the technology they've developed, and just on the basis of what you've said, I'm agreeing with you that they've weaponized everything. They've turned all this technology into what is destructive. So it's pretty clear what their technology is all about. It's about creating chaos and death and destruction. And so, you know, they're telling us exactly what they're doing. It's not like we can't figure this out. The thing we have to focus on is what is going to be the solution to counter that. And I trust that it is of a spiritual nature. That answer is going to come to us, and the power to execute that and come against this is going to be from a spiritual realm. Sheldon, any other questions or comments before we let you go?
No, I really appreciate you letting me on for here for a while. I'll call in again some night.
Okay, please do, and tell your friends about us, too.
We'll do. Have a good one.
All right, you too. Well, Jim, you see what David Brandt's little piece got us talking about tonight? You know, we didn't really plan anything, but, you know, that's really how you and I feel. I know that from what we've talked about. It's interesting, and I thought Ken wouldn't mind hearing us read this over the air. Actually, he gave us permission to do that, so...
Well, I'm glad you did, because it formed a nucleus from which most of the show expanded. And hopefully we covered some interesting territory.
Yes. Now, you're going to be with us again next week, and I know that there's a lot going on right now all over the place. Things that we know about and things that are manifesting. And so I'll leave next week's topic up to you. I don't want to bore you to death with these inferences of spirituality, although I do know that you value that. And, you know, we're trying to tie all the different aspects of what our reality is into its natural relationship with, you know, who we are, and then that is really the realm of spirituality. Here we weren't really talking about 9/11, but that issue came up, and it's in relationship to what you and I have been talking about. So, you know, if something is weighing heavy on your heart that you want to communicate with your audience, you have my permission to come up with a topic.
All right. I will definitely give that some careful consideration. But in the meantime, I would like to interject that there's nothing boring about spirituality in any way, shape, or form. As a matter of fact, it's just the opposite. It takes on every aspect of life as we know it, if you give the concept proper consideration. I just wish that there was a way of studying the realm of the spirit more directly. And of course there are ways, but there again, it requires money and time and things that we're not allowed to have in this particular global manifestation.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show again, and I look forward to next week's show and whatever topic you might pick for that evening. I do want to mention one thing before we sign off here, and it pertains to a link that I put up on a new page on my website under Breaking Stories. If you didn't tune into last night's show, you may want to check this out. Look for a title worded Michelle and Barack Reveal Reptilian Baggage. Click on that link. It's on the lower right-hand column of the Breaking Stories page at directlightproductions.com. Click on that. It'll take you to Ken Adachi's brilliant piece on the analysis of a photograph taken at Heathrow Airport in London. And I think it was taken on the 1st of April, and it was published in the U.S. magazine. Some a viewer and a visitor at Ken's site sent this photo into him and had a question about something she saw in the photo. And Ken enlarged it and sent me some copies of the enlargements and the photo itself. And we go to town on these things when they look like this. There are some very interesting manifestations occurring within the context of these photographs. Ken is by no means finished cropping out the anomalies that appear, but it goes hand in hand with many of the things that you and I have talked about on this show, Jim, as well as many of my other guests, in getting to the bottom of who's behind all this stuff that you alluded to this evening and on past shows. So you owe it to yourselves to have a gander at those photos and really study them. As you look at them, you'll see more and more things than what appears to be possibly just one item. There are literally hundreds of manifestations that are occurring in these photographs, and they've been cropped out. They've not been created in any false way, basically enlarged, and cropping them out is just taking a segment of the picture and blowing it up so that you can see more detail, much like looking at a slide under a microscope. It's fascinating, and Ken had some interesting things to say about it too. So there's more analysis coming out about photographs. I've got a piece that has taken me a little longer than expected because there are things, as always happens when I'm concluding a piece, more things come to the forefront and have to be incorporated into the work. But that's the nature of research. So with that, Jim, I want to wish you a great weekend. Thanks for being on the show tonight, and I look forward to your visit next week.
Thank you, Don, and you have a good weekend, too.
Thank you. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and special thanks not only to Jim Murray for being on the show tonight, but to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, Sheldon for calling in from Tucson, Arizona, and you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join us again next week. On Monday, my special guest will be Mr. Greg Pappas. In the meantime, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.